Queer Voices starts now.
Deborah Moncrief Bell, and today I'm delighted to be talking with my good friend, my longtime friend, C. Brian Keever. Now, Brian, you've been a mainstay of the Houston GLBT community for some time now. I think you're one of the first people I met in the community. What brought you to Houston?
A friend of mine, Hanaro, was my roommate in Charlotte, and then I went to Atlanta, and he came here, and then I came here to visit, and I was like, oh my God, I have to move here. And that was in 1981.
So what attracted you to Houston?
Back in 81, the gay community was humongous. There was so much going on, and Kathy was running for mayor.
Kathy Whitmire.
I kind of got involved with GPC and, you know, just things like that that I never did on the East Coast. I mean, I was in the newspaper in Charlotte, but that was about it.
So your activism really started when you arrived in Houston and you got involved in the Gay Political Caucus. At that time, it was called the Gay Political Caucus. And what were some of the activities at that time?
Well, I was trying to remember who I met first that wanted me. I was holding a sign, Montrose Boulevard and Westheimer, that said Kathy Whitmire, one of her signs, to vote for her. Because I was like, oh, that makes sense. I want to do that. So God knows I had been wanting to be political, but had nowhere to do it.
And you said Charlotte, that was North Carolina?
Yes. I'm originally from North Carolina.
I see. And as I said, I introduced you as C. Brian Keever, and for the longest time, I just knew you as Brian, but you started using your first name again, Carmen.
It's so strange. I was using Carmen at work at Legacy because they were like three Brians, and so I would use that for my medical, like if Social Security or somebody would call, they would always ask for my first name, which is Carmen. And so I started using that because that was my father's name.
I see. Because I've always known you as Brian. And
I've always been Brian in the gay community.
And speaking of the gay community, you've been involved in just about everything through the years. Tell me a little bit about doing drag and your persona as Demita Jo.
I got it back in the 80s, late 80s, I should say. A couple of friends of mine were out and about, and I went with them. We went to, I don't remember what bar, I think we went to Midnight Sun or something. It was, you know, at the time it was where people went and did shows and stuff, and back then, they weren't really raising money for AIDS or anything because, God, it had been before 86 then. So, but I went with a couple, and I was like, well, that's kind of cool because I had experimented in Charlotte with two friends of mine that were makeup artists, and they were like, let's paint you. And so I had done it a couple times in Charlotte, but, you know, not just for the sake of doing it, because I was working at a bar in Charlotte called the Scorpio Disco.
Oh, the good old Scorpio Disco.
I laugh, I'm going, and that was, trust me, that was in the 70s, so.
And where did you get the name Demita Jo?
Demita Jo was a real life person. She was a lounge type singer. I have a tape I used to use years ago as my introduction. Sometimes it's a B&B or different places. I would turn it on. It would go, hello, please welcome to the stage the star, Mercury recording star, Miss Demita Jo. And that's when I would start with the, hey, look me over was her first thing she did. So before I was here in Texas, when I was back on the East Coast, there was April Love, May Hail, and I was June Heaven, and we were the three seasons, I guess. It was just so strange, but, you know, it was the 70s, so we were April, May, and June. And after I left there, I went, oh, no.
You also have identified with several of the different communities in Houston, the Levi and Leather community.
I got involved, you know, just to raise money. I was helping out as a volunteer at McAdory House. I don't know how many years ago that was, through Ray, and there was half a dozen of them. Bruce Cook
and Ray Hill.
And one or two more, but yeah, that was, I just had a throwback to remember all that.
And for those that don't know, explain what the McAdory House was.
It was a house in the Montrose that we used for PWAs, for gay PWAs, that and they could kind of stay there, and we went in and fed them. And then Bruce Cook opened the very first, I don't think he really called it Stone Soup then, but it was in the same house. It just, we would give food out.
The food pantry.
Right, yeah. But I don't think he called it that then, but he was in charge of it. He started it. And we were best friends, so, you know, I just kind of was there and helped out, you know, and then I got involved with PWA Coalition, and then it followed from there.
Now, you have been involved with several publications in Houston.
Oh, yes.
This Week in Texas, PWT. How long did you work there?
I worked there actually till 1999 when we had to go out of business. I worked there, God, when Chuck Patrick and Jim Vitato actually ran it. And that was when we were at 2205 Montrose Boulevard here in Houston, Texas. But we had offices in Dallas, Austin, and San Antonio of the tour that people could go in and place ads and stuff, especially in Dallas. That's where Alan and Steve live. So we were literally a statewide gay and lesbian entertainment news publication.
And what were your duties there?
I went out and covered news for Chuck. I took pictures for Hot Tea. I helped pretty much just about a catch-all type thing, you know, that if you needed help over here, you needed help over there. And one of the guys that was in charge of all the articles and stuff's name was Blaze DeStefano or DeSpano, something like that, you know, and he was good, you know, half a dozen other people, you know, but we had a kind of a little group that we always were together, and Chuck and I would decide where we're going to go take pictures, and he would go to the clubs on this side, I'd go to the clubs on this side, and Roxanne used to, I would come in to take pictures for the show or something, and Roxanne would turn and let you, oh, look, Twist's here.
And who was Roxanne?
She was Roxanne Collins, I believe. She was one of the entertainers in charge of shows at EJ's. That was it, you know, because we would go to different clubs. And Chuck would always say, okay, now when you go in, find either a bar manager or someone that say, oh, hi, good to see you. How are you doing? I'm going to take a few pictures. Take a few pictures and then sneak out either a side door or the back door or something. And when someone would ask, is Chuck still, yeah, he's around here taking pictures. And he was already at another bar. So that was the way we did that, making sure someone saw us and all that kind of stuff. So that way we could run in, run out.
Covering the Houston community.
And back then there was quite a lot of clubs at the time still, you know, that were open. You know, we had them in downtown. We had them out Southwest, we had a huge amount in Montrose, but yeah, that was at the time where we pretty much circled and went around the city, because we, at that point in time, I was very impressed and happy at the same time that we had that many and that many people that actually went to it and enjoyed, and God knows how many times I stood in line at the Copa on Sunday night to see the Fabulous Four.
And the Fabulous Four were?
Fabulous Four was the Sunday night super shows at the Copa on Kirby and Richmond. And that was Gene Howe's bar. It was a wonderful bar. Naomi Sims, Hot Chocolate, Tasha Cole, and Donna Day were the four. They had the Sunday super show. It was, you know, the Fabulous Four. And they were. Naomi ended up being a good friend, and Chocolate before she moved to Vegas. And so I knew Larry from the East Coast. That was really fun. I enjoyed doing that. That was good. And of course, I also did serious reporting. I actually had to go down to HPD and turn in my license to try to get, or did I did get, a City of Houston press pass. So that way you could go in and actually take stuff and listen to stuff that the common person couldn't do. So that helped.
This is a trip down memory lane, I know, but it's also kind of a look back at some of the things that took place in Houston. You've been part of a rich history, not only the clubs, but the publications and some of the other activities. I know you were Grand Marshal of Pride one year. What year was that, Brian?
I want to say it was 92 or 4. I'm thinking 4. I've got a magnet on my refrigerator that Frank did. Bismarck was still in the picture behind where he took it, which was there at the corner, you know, at Montrose and Westerm in that little strip center. And I laughed. I said, God, I totally forgot about Bismarck. And then I think it was 2 years later that I was Empress of the Imperial Court System, and I was in the parade at the beginning for that also. It was like bum, bum, bum. And I was also on the committee for Pride through Jack Kalinske, Kara Clark, me, Larry Bonnery, you know, back then, you know, and which was wonderful. I mean,
the early days, the committee that put on Pride was formed ad hoc. And so different people would be on it. There was kind of the core group that kept it together and would say, okay, it's time for everyone to get together to plan Pride. And of course, Jeff Walensky stayed doing that for many years.
Oh, yeah.
And incorporated the organization. What was it like to be Grand Marshal?
Well, the first time I was as Grand Marshal for the parade, I had done work on it for a while, but it was just seeing, riding in that parade and seeing all the people and them yelling and hollering and seeing all the different ages and all this stuff. It was so exhilarating and fun at that point in time, you know, that, wow, we're doing really good. And then we went to probably a half a dozen Pride events where we were introduced and we did a little talk. So it was more than just a ride. Back then, we did a lot of different things where we did a gay history, and it was usually Ray and Jack and a couple of the others that we would have a gay history during the week. I should say it was GNL at the time. I just laugh. I'm going, it was, you know, it was just Pride. We called it the Gay and Lesbian Pride Week at the time.
What are some of the other things that you mentioned the court and having been Empress. So for those that don't know, explain what the court is.
Let's see, it's the Royal Sovereign and Imperial Court of the Single Star of Houston, Inc., which is a, for lack of a better term, drag queen union. And it's nationwide, international, as a matter of fact. We have all the different ones in Mexico, United States, Canada, did a lot of work.
How does one get to be an empress?
The city actually votes on it, like you're running for, you know, a Democratic chair, Republican chair, something like that. You have to get nominated, of course, but, and then you go around and raise money for whatever charity to try to get that also. And at the time, I was vice president at the time. I wasn't president yet, of the National Leather Association Houston. So people freaked when they said, what do you mean you're going to be an empress? You're a leather man. I said, I'll be raising money for our community. You can do it, a pair of chaps or a girdle. As long as you're helping people out, it's usually $1 at a time.
That's a great expression, whether you're wearing a pair of chaps or a girdle. That is really good, Brian. What are some of the other things that you've been involved in?
It was so funny. For a while there, I was real involved with kind of the politics, and then part of I was a member of Miss Camp America for a few years. I was actually in the top 9 one year, and Miss Camp America was a social organization at the time, and it was on the same night as the Miss America pageant. And it was so funny, we would have a party and they would nominate, you know, and pull from a hat who the top 10 were going to be. If your state did, then the next year you had to perform and do it. We performed at the music hall because it was a very big, at the time, for lack of a better term, glamorous event. You know, you had rehearsals and each person had to do a talent, you know, type thing. And you had backup people, backup dancers, all kinds of stuff. That was wonderful.
They were fabulous productions.
Oh, yeah. And we had to work on them a lot.
Now, Brian, you'll soon be 70 years old.
Correct.
This year. And you're a resident at Law Harrington, which is the senior living center built by the Montrose Center. Speaking of legacy, you were a longtime employee of Legacy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I still theoretically, I do some work, but it's not inside of Legacy's building anymore because I ended up being, I've been there 14, 15 years of different various. I started at 3311 Richmond where we had the gym and social services and vision. And I got hired to go out with two or three other people and we were starting a federal grant from the Bush administration to go find out if seniors actually moved, if you know, we had gay and lesbian seniors. And so we would go out to some of the nursing homes and some of the AARP type to get them to fill out forms and stuff, which was the precursor to the SPRI that we have here. At the time, the Montrose Counseling Center and Legacy were in it both.
So you were part of the group of people that helped advise what would eventually become Law.
Right. You know, and we would go and talk to nursing homes, you know, here in Houston and in Galveston and all, to talk to them about, you know, any of their tenants at the time. And I had a few of them. It was so funny. Deborah, she said, well, you know, there may be some members of our community that are residents here. And this one woman goes, oh, we don't have those kind of people here. And of course they did, you know, so it was a learning experience. And we went over to United Way once a month and did a big get together that all the different helpers and stuff did. And it was wonderful. We went to Galveston and did some of the senior get togethers at some of the churches and some of the other places. And we always had a big fry with different, you know, the different colors. And we would talk about it and everything. So that was, you know, really wonderful. It was because the fun part was it was a federal grant from the Bush administration to see if we actually existed.
So SPRI is a seniors preparing for their rainbow years. It's the senior services provided by the Montrose Center, which moved over to the Law Harrington complex. Now, Brian, I know one of the things about you is that you're a long-term survivor of HIV.
Oh, yes.
What is that like, being someone who has moved from all those days of being a mover and shaker to now living in senior housing?
It's kind of, at first, it was really scary because I've always been such a forward, out, public. You know, I used to tell people I'm a professional homosexual. I'm 70 years old now, so it's like, you know, it's not like I'm as spry as I used to be, and I'm not on my bike anymore. I'm on a cane. And
for many years, you didn't have a car, and so you used a bicycle and went all over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from the 80s, I think toward the end of the 80s, I got sick in 86 with HIV and went through that whole thing of getting really skinny and all that and doing different drug regimens and stuff. And I'm lucky that it's 2022 and I'm still here. So many of my good friends and people are not with us anymore. But, you know, you have to take your drugs. You have to go get your lab work done and things, you know, that you have to do to stay alive.
You have to do all those things that anyone has to do to be healthy, to healthy living. Do you credit anything in particular with allowing you to live all these many years?
I was luckily, I had Dr. Gary Bruton started at the Institute for Immunological Disorders which was, lack of a better term, AIDS hospital that MD Anderson started on the North Freeway just before Little York. And it was, that's where they kind of moved all of us. And it was a good thing because...
Was that what became Thomas Street?
Kind of, but it was just so bizarre. It only lasted 2 years, maybe. We had Peter Mansell, we had Gary Bruton, who was mine, Rios, and I think Valfrey at the time. There were four of them. I was doing an experimental drug test through something laboratories in Lyon, France, and I had to take 6 horse pills every Wednesday, and I was sick as a dog for a day and a half, but that's what got me through all the problems that I had. But unfortunately, they didn't want to pay FDA all that money, so it never became a part of the regimen here in America. It did in Canada and Europe and all that stuff. It was part of the 2 or 3 different ones that, you know, we did back then to see if what will work, what won't work. And it was an experience I'm glad I went through because it kept me going.
And now you have the delight of facing other issues as you age.
Oh, yeah. I laugh. I'm 70 years old. I now walk on a cane. I have osteoporosis. I have other health issues. I said, oh, goodness, I've outlived HIV to be in my elder years with the old people stuff, which I have.
Which isn't that a wonderful thing?
Oh, it is. I just can't imagine. I tell people, I don't know how in the heck I'm still here, but I am, and I'm very glad to be, and you know, thank the Lord every day.
This is Deborah Moncrief Bell, and I've been talking to Brian Keever, also known to some as Carmen. Brian, has there been anything that I didn't ask you about that you'd like to tell people?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Well, kind of. It was one of those things. It was part of, I guess, getting older or something. I lost a bunch of friends, but at the same time, I helped a bunch of friends, which made me very happy in the fact, because I've always been, someone says, you should have been a social worker. I said, well, I kind of was without the title of, taking care and helping out my friends that needed it. And it was, it just made me feel good to do that because it got me out of a house and it got me active, and I always enjoyed helping people out. And someone says, well, you've definitely done that. But it was good. I'm still doing it. So, hey.
Just because we're old and live in senior housing doesn't mean that we can't still contribute.
Now that it's not quite as bad, I think we're going to be able to get out and do a few more senior outings and stuff from here at the Law Harrington Senior Living Center, which is really nice. It's 4 floors. It's a LGBT-affirming building, which helps. It's in Third Ward, so we're right near 288.
Which is now called the Barbara Jordan Memorial Parkway. So when you said things are getting better, I am supposing you mean because of the COVID protocol.
Right. I can remember last year when we would come down, pick up food, go back to our room and eat there because you couldn't have people together and wearing 2 different masks. Knock on wood, hopefully we're getting better in it and people are paying attention. And
well, everyone still has to take precautions and we have to stay alert because there are changes every day. But hopefully we won't go back to being in such a, as they called it, lockdown, because it was very isolating. And if you're already a senior and maybe have limited ability to get out and about, it was even more so. But we managed and we endure. And like you said, we're still here. I really appreciate you talking with me, Brian. It's always a good time with you.
I've enjoyed this. It's really cool. I haven't done a lot of this, you know, in a couple of years. So it's very nice, and it's good to make sure that we're out and people can hear us, and hopefully we'll learn some information they didn't know before.